Good afternoon. In the fall of 1946, I received a letter from Dover, New Hampshire, which read, "Dear Blackie, if you want a strange story about a man who was buried in a glass coffin filled with alcohol, you can get the details from Dr. Cobb or George E. Ruitzer at Hill's Corner, North Stratford, New Hampshire." The letter was signed Nathaniel H. Lunt, president of the New Hampshire Antique Dealers Association. I sent a note thanking Mr. Lunt for the tip, and I wrote both Dr. Cobb and Mr. Ruitzer up in North Stratford. Those letters came back, stamped wrong address, no such person returned to sender. So I added Hill's Corner to the address and sent them out again. But back they came, unopened and undelivered. I then put both letters in fresh envelopes and mailed them to Mr. Lunt, requesting him to forward them to the elusive gentlemen, Dr. Cobb and Mr. Ruitzer. And in a few days, I received a postcard saying, "If you can get up here before I go south for the winter, I'll tell you all about the incarceration in alcohol. Yours truly, Dr. George E. Cobb, Hill's Corner, Blue Job Mountain, Rochester, New Hampshire, RFD. We didn't get up to Blue Job Mountain that fall because I was taken ill. And while I was laid up, Dr. Cobb did go south, but not to Florida as I supposed. Just south down the mountain a few miles to the county farm. And later he was taken to the state hospital over in Concord. For the strange career of this well-known country character was drawing to a close after 60 years of a dual existence. You see, this so-called Dr. Cobb and Mr. George E. Ruitzer were one and the same person. Ruitzer was his real name, and the Dr. Cobb business, just pure imagination. I guess every New England community has at some time had its local character. He might be the hermit who lives alone with his dog on the edge of the town, or the bewhiskered junkman who roams the countryside in a creaky wagon, picking up papers, rags, and bottles. He could be the jack-of-all-trades who will soddy a teakettle or clean out the sink spout. And sometimes he's the nimble-witted country correspondent who writes humorous pieces for the local newspaper. Mr. George E. Ruitzer, better known around Rochester, New Hampshire as Dr. Cobb, was all of these. And being over 6 feet tall with long red hair in summer and a bright bushy red beard in winter, he was well known for miles and miles around. He lived in an unpainted ramshackle house at the Hill's Corner Crossroads, halfway up Blue Job Mountain. He did collect junk with his old black horse and little dog under the wagon, and he could and would do all sorts of odd jobs, and for 30 years, he was a weekly contributor to the Rochester Courier. Ex-editor Charles Jeunesse of Rochester told us, "You know, a lot of our readers turn to Dr. Cobb's column first to get a chuckle out of such society items as Sally Jane Swift passed the Hill's Corner grocery store last Tuesday morning with her husband and three children in a dump cart." The present publisher, Mr. Ellery J. Lyons, said, "Some folks who used to live around here and then moved out west subscribed to the Courier just so they wouldn't miss the little homey items in Dr. Cobb's weekly column. For instance, every week he started off with this item. Quote, 'Last Sunday afternoon, 14 persons were observed by your correspondent ascending Blue Job Mountain.' And farther down in the column he would write, 'Last Sunday evening, 14 persons were observed descending Blue Job Mountain.' I said, 'You mean to tell me you ran that stuff in your paper every week?' 'Every week for over 30 years. One week I omitted it, and you should have heard the howls of protest. The telephone rang all day. Readers calling up to ask how many ascended and descended Blue Job last Sunday.' I asked Mr. Jeunesse if he ever had to correct Dr. Cobb's copy. He said, 'Not on your life. It wasn't safe to. I recall one time he sent in an item about his neighbor, Charles Pinkham, being called one Sunday morning to butcher Mary Ann Colby's pet pig, Carrie. Well, I changed the Sunday morning to recently, and Ruitzer barged in here like a mad bull. 'What do you mean, changing my copy? Doesn't the Rochester Courier stand for the truth? That there hog was butchered on Sunday morning, not recently.'" You know, we were amazed when Editor Lyons showed us clippings from all parts of the world containing quotes from Dr. Cobb's column in the Rochester Courier. The New Orleans Times-Picayune, Honolulu Advertiser, even the Shanghai China Times had reprinted his local stories from such places as Pigpen Corners and Barn Door Ridge. The late Frank Knox frequently quoted Dr. Cobb in his Manchester Union and Chicago Daily News, And one of Dr. Cobb's paragraphs from North Stratford, New Hampshire, made all the papers through the Associated Press. It was during the last depression. Many of the woolling mills in Massachusetts and New Hampshire were closed down, and thousands of mill hands were looking for any kind of a job they could get. Mr. Ruitzer, learning that Mrs. Rebecca Foss was knitting her husband a new pair of woolen mittens, mentioned the matter in his column like this, quote, "Local residents will be glad to learn that Mrs. Rebecca Foss has started up her knitting factory. Already, two old and experienced hands have been given employment." The exchange editors of Metropolitan papers seized this little tidbit of good news as an industrial trend. It was put on the AP wire and played up by the news commentators, with the result that old Granny Foss was deluged with mail and a small army of mill workers looking for jobs. One enterprising concern sent its crack salesman from Boston to solicit her business, only to find that the two old hands belonged to Becky herself. When Ruitzer ran out of real news, he used his imagination, and the mythical Dr. Cobb was the victim of many harmless jokes. Equally mythical was the Hills Corner Academy, a pile of old rotten boards in the cellar hole across from the house where Ruitzer lived. Once this pile of debris had been a one-room district schoolhouse, where Ruitzer learned his ABCs. Every autumn, Dr. Cobb described the opening of the Hills Corner Academy. And each June, he wrote glowing accounts of the graduation exercises. The athletic teams of the Hills Corner Academy were always victorious, and its fictitious alumni read like a glorified who's who. George E. Ruitzer passed on before we could get to see him. But last July, we went to Rochester and interviewed several citizens who had known him for a long time. Mrs. Edith Foss Mitchell of Garnick acted as our guide. And after a 10-mile ride through beautiful but rugged hill country, we came to the crossroads and the dilapidated house where Ruitzer led his Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde existence. The sagging shelves of the dusty kitchen still contained a few old cans left over from the days when his house was a country corner grocery store. We called on Miss Carrie Faulkner, who smiled and said, "Dr. Cobb went by here day after day with his old wagon loaded with junk. He practically lived out of tin cans, I understand, and nobody ever knew him to do any cooking. If you want to know a lot more about him, you go see Mr. Charles Pinkham, up the road a piece." Mr. Pinkham, a grand old Yankee about 75, greeted us from his front steps. "Dr. Cobb? Well, I guess I did know him. Funny cuss he was, but talented. Used to drop in here almost every night, the doc did. He was mighty lonesome, but he was too country to admit it. I asked him one day how he stood it, living all winter in that empty house on the bleak side of Blue Job. He looked me right in the eye and he said, 'Why, I have too much company to get lonesome. Why, t'other night I'd barely dropped off to sleep when I heard the darndest racket downstairs and band music. And the first thing I knowed, there was 40 fellas in uniform, all playing different instruments, a-marching around my bed. Wa'n't it nice for all them members of the Rochester band to come way up here and serenade me on a cold winter's night?' Huh, old Doc Cobb was a clever duck, Mr. Pinkham said, but the gall-dangest liar I ever met." I asked Mr. Pinkham if he knew how Mr. Ruitzer got his nom de plume, Dr. Cobb. "Huh, sure I do," he said, slapping his knee. "And that's a good one. About 30 years ago, Ruitzer was hard up for cash to buy bottles to put his elixir of life into. So he rode around picking up junk, old rubber boots, lead pipe and the like, and he come to one house where the sink spout was plugged. The woman said, 'I'll give you 50 cents if you'll clean out that spout.' Well, sir, George rammed up a wire and he found a corn cob. She paid him and he drove off. And for the next 3 years, mister, there was the darndest epidemic of plugged up sink spouts ever seen in this section of New Hampshire. Now, I don't say that George Ruitzer rammed them corn cobs up all them sink spouts, but it looked mighty suspicious when he dug them out at 50 cents a throw. And after that, he was always called Dr. Cobb. Get it?" I said, "Well, what about the elixir of life that you mentioned?" "Oh," he said, "that was Doc Cobb's home brew. He claimed it was good for everything what ailed man or beast. But I never saw any four-footed customers going down his cellar stairs. They raided him finally and took him to court. That was during Prohibition." This reminded me of the man who was supposed to be preserved in alcohol. So I inquired if Mr. Pinkham had heard about it. "Heard of it? Why, I seen him through the glass coffin over there in the family tomb." That was old Peddler Hill. And he had himself buried in a lead box with a plate glass top. And he was completely covered with 90-proof alky. But some of the boys bored a hole in the coffin and dreamed it off. Now he's in a dry box and all bricked up. Used to be lots going on up here in the old days. Mr. Charles Jeunesse told us about one incident that livened up a quiet Sunday afternoon. Seems that Rowitzer was a natural-born trader. But once in a while, he got trimmed. A local hoss jockey palmed off a no-good nag on Doc Cobb, but he didn't say a word. He just sat tight and waited to spell to get even. He got his chance when a farmer asked him to take an old sick horse he had and see that she was humanely dispatched and then decently buried out in the field. On the way home, Ruitzer had to pass the hoss jockey's house. And being a bit chilly, he took a little nip from his brandy bottle. The old plug looked so wistful, he gave her a slug, too. Just for priming, he said. The result was startling even to Ruitzer. That old bag of bones came to life like she'd been struck by lightning. She kicked over the dashboard and ran away, with Ruitzer hanging onto the reins, his red whiskers flying in the wind, and he hollering, "Whoa, Nellie, whoa!" He brought her to a stop right in front of the fella's house who had sold him the bum nag. "Pretty lively mare you got, Dr. Cobb." "Too all-fired lively for me," said Ruitzer. "I don't like a fast horse, as you well know." "Do you want to sell?" asked the jockey. "No," said Ruitzer, wiping the whiskers out of his eyes. "I won't sell, but I might swap for something slower." And a few minutes later, he drove out of the yard with a darn good workhorse. That night, the jockey told his cronies down at the stable how he'd put it over old Doc Cobb. But when he went to the barn next morning to show off his newly acquired fast stepper, she was dead on a doornail. Doc Cobb said, "I didn't have to dispatch her after all. And I reckon with all that good brandy in her, Nellie died happy." The Doc himself died in January 1948. And when his will was probated, it made the front pages. Even in death, the eccentric country character had his joke. For the 12-page last will and testament of George E. Ruitzer was filled with the same sly humor which had characterized his lonely existence. There wasn't any money to pay them, but just the same, he made a number of bequests. He set up a baby fund for the first 100 babies born in Rochester after his death, provided their parents didn't have more than $5,000 worth of taxable property. He left his house and other real estate to the Salvation Army, provided that worthy organization would hold 2 meetings a year on his premises as long as the Salvation Army existed anywhere in the world. The sum of $55 was left to the Rochester City Band to provide instruments for worthy boys wishing to become musicians, and the same amount to the New Hampshire Orphans Home for boys who desired an education. To certain acquaintances and friends, he bequeathed such odd sums as $3.19, $2.87, and $1. And his will ended with these words to the undertaker: "Don't forget to have the band play Yankee Doodle." All of which seems to show that no matter where you live or how lonely you may be, you can have a lot of fun and make hosts of friends if you have a lively imagination and use it. Folks will be talking about old Doc Cobb, the eccentric hermit of Blue Job Mountain, long after George E. Ruitzer has been forgotten.